Runner on first base, two outs, and the pitch. The runner goes. The throw down to second base, the tag, he is out. And that is another caught stealing.
Ain't nothing but woods and water. Drop a deer from a stand. Catch a fish with a bobber. Drink a beer out the can. Liquor out the bottle. How the good Lord intended it. Yes, he did. I love my country. I love my country.
What's going on, Kleptos? How is everyone? And welcome back to Caught Stealing with E. Marquez. Look, I got a great show today. Today I'm going to talk about the sweet art of hitting. Now, it's not all that easy. Remember, hitting in baseball, great players get 3 hits out of 10 at-bats, and they're in the Hall of Fame. All right? So just put that in perspective. That's 30%. That's batting 300. And the one thing that we have to understand, right, is you're hitting a round ball with a round bat square. Now, there's the tricky part. Because we're actually not going to hit it square. If you hit the ball square on the money, the ball will knuckle off the bat, and it'll have like a weird trajectory. It'll have a weird, it'll come off the bat with a kind of wobble, because the ball will not be spinning off the bat. So although it's coming out hard, it's coming off the bat hard and with some great velocity, it still will not be of any distance. It'll just come out hard. It might be like a line drive 3 feet off the ground through the infield, and maybe even carry out to the outfield. What we want to do, or what you see is happening on the big leagues and the big stage, is they're hitting the bottom middle of the baseball, because they want that backspin. That backspin carries. Now, that backspin is not only in baseball. That backspin is in every sport. In football, when you throw the ball, you want to get rotation in the football. That's why they got the laces. So when you have the laces, you want that spin, kind of like if you put your hand on top, put your palm down, and then rotate your hand in a half moon, circulate like a half circle, and rotate it. And you'll see that's the kind of action you want. You want your fingers to leave the football at the last minute and like almost snap it off. That's where you hear the phrase flick of the wrist, because you want that finger to snap the ball. You get more rotation, and that's why NFL football quarterbacks can throw the ball so hard and so far, because they got that uncanny ability. And that's the backspin. That's the backspin. When you have in basketball, when you're shooting, you want the middle finger and your ring finger to leave the ball last, but you want that spin, and you get an arc to the shot, and that ball and that spin carries the ball further. So if you see, there's a lot of different ways to do it. You have some basketball players that put their non-shooting hand. So if you're a right-hander, your left hand is your non-shooting hand, and it's on the face, it's on the opposite end of the basketball. So your shooting hand is underneath the ball, and your back of your hand is close to your face when you go up. When you go up and you get that spin, which is happening from both hands, the ball will carry in air. Now, some other shooters are taught to put an L or a T with their two thumbs, one on the side of the basketball and one on the where they're holding the basketball in front of their face. That's how I shoot. So I'll have it like that, and I'm using basically my left hand as a guide hand, but my right hand is my shooting hand, and I'll try to get a flick. I'll try to flick the ball without moving my left hand. And I'll flick the ball at the end so it can carry more. So that way I don't need shoulder and bicep, and I don't need to jump higher for a jump shot. All I need to do is rely on my wrist and get the ball in a higher arc. Same way goes for baseball. What happens is you want to hit the ball in the bottom half of the ball. Baseball, softball, etc. Because when you hit the bottom half of the ball, you're going to get a backspin. And that backspin carries the ball. Now it carries the ball further. If you get it, reason why you want to hit the bottom half is because it lifts the ball. So that would get the ball in the air. Because it's physics, right? So the ball is coming in. If you hit the ball on the top middle, it's going to go to the ground. If you hit the ball in the middle, it's going to go line drive, and it won't have much of a spin. And if you hit it bottom middle, it's going to go in a rotation. Billiards is the same thing. It pops into mind when I discuss this, because you get that reaction. So when you hit the cue ball on the bottom middle, it will give the force to the ball it's hitting, and that gives it this backspin that it needs, and that cue ball will stand right there as it makes contact, while the power, the strength of that contact will lead that other ball to take the energy. So baseball's the same, and basketball, lacrosse, hockey, they're all the same. They're all the same in that regard. It's backspin. You want that spin. Pitchers spin the same way. Pitchers want that ball to leave their fingers at the very end so they can get that spin. You hear fast pitch. You hear when they got the fastball, they want that that high spin rate, right? That's why they want more grip. They want a better grip on their fastball, a better grip on the baseball when they're pitching. And that's the key here. And that's what we're talking about. Now, you'll see batters got different batting stance. They got different approaches at the plate. The one question that I would love to ask a big leaguer is why they have to have, why do they have to have the same position in the batter's box all the time? Like you see them digging in, and then they have a little hole. It's kind of like a grip. I understand the back end, the back foot, because you don't want to slip. You don't want that foot to slip. You just want that to rotate. Again, you don't want the front foot to slip. If you take a high stride, if you take a high leg kick, you don't want to get a long stride. But my question is, why don't you move up? Why don't you move back? Why don't you move into the plate in different situations? Why do you want to stay the same in the same spot of the batter's box? That's my question. Because as I play, now I play fast pitch softball, right? So, and then I play high arc softball mostly. Now, I'm not playing baseball. But my approach is, and I plan to next year play in a 40 and over league. But my plan, and I will test this out. I will go ahead and see how it is moving in and out, back and forth in the batter's box, depending on the situation. Of course, my first two cuts and then at bat with the pitch that I want to hit, I'm going to just go for as hitting the ball as hard as I can. And then situationally after that, sometimes I'll have a late kick But once it's two strikes, or once the pitcher I know has dominating power, I won't go with a stride or leg kick. So I adjust it up. But then if a pitcher is up there, is just not as good as I think he is, or he doesn't have good stuff, I'm probably going to move up in the batter's box. I'm going to move back. I'm going to move to the side. I'm going to move in. It all depends. But I'm going to give it a shot. Here in softball, I move all over the place. I even move while the pitch is being thrown. So I have this timing mechanism where little like Nolan Arenado, that's where I've adapted it from. And the way it is that my back foot is never solid in like a toe hold. It's moving. Like I'm kind of like, you know, jostling back and forth, left and right, left and right. So I'm a right-handed hitter. But if I feel that my first at bat, the pitcher likes to come in on me, I will use my front foot as a timing mechanism, and then my back foot will either go back a little bit, towards the plate a little bit, back towards the catcher a little bit. It depends on how I feel the pitch is coming at me. And I would move, and I would rely on my hands, because we don't have fences in the park in the parks that we play. So I don't need to generate that power as much as in fast pitch softball, you don't need to generate power much, because with the metal bats or with the high technology bats and the materials are being used, and you snap your wrist through, like I said, bottom half of the ball, the ball's gonna fly and the power is coming from the pitcher. Now, semi-fast, where it's slingshot or it's not windmill, that kind of softball, you got to generate. And if you're using wooden bats in softball, in the fast pitch softball arena or semi-fast pitch, you have to generate your own power. There, I will implement it also, because I want to be using my back foot as my power, rather than my front foot being the pendulum. So that's why I want to ask a big leaguer. One of these days, I want to ask him. And I want to ask the likes of Javi Baez. The likes of... I would love to ask Anthony Rizzo. Nolan Arenado, I think before this year, I was watching some tape on him in the spring training. And he kind of kept his foot, his back foot, in a solid position. I want to ask all these guys. I want to ask them all. I want to pick their brain about what do you go about, like, how is it that you rely on that, you know, that back foot? Because for me, in my opinion, the front foot is key. If you get your front foot down, and I noticed Addison Russell several years in a row, I noticed him not having the front foot control. But he had great ability to get his hands through the zone, right? But he didn't have any hand strength either, because he would lose the bat often as he swung. But that could be a sign of the fact that he's bringing the bat through the zone so quickly. So you know he's got that ability. But his front foot was always off. He would either do his high leg kick, stride, and by the time he stride, the ball's past him already. So, I would want to ask these guys, why is it they don't want to move around in that batter's box? Because I think that's significant. Number one, it would be a real significance, because the pitcher would then change up. The pitcher would change up his approach, because he wouldn't really know how to attack the batter. If the batter comes in at bat number one and he's deep and close, he's deep in the batter's box, that means close to the catcher, and then closer to the plate. Then the second at bat, he's up closer to the pitcher, but then away from the plate. So when he does those things, now the catcher's looking at that, and the pitcher, now they're like, wait a minute, is he know something that I don't know? Is he going to attack? Is he going to go for a... is he going to go for a pitch that I don't know what he's going to go for? Is he going to do, you know, is he looking for a pitch that I don't know what he's looking for? That kind of stuff. So, we want to know, like, I want to know those things. So, one of the things that, you know, those are big things. Now, watching a ball game, and if I'm looking at a batter, I know that these batters are not going to have, I know these batters are not going to have a 4-for-4, 5-for-5 day every day. Like I said, the great batters get 3 hits out of 10 at-bats. But what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the game within the game. I want to know how this batter is approaching this pitcher. Is he just going out there without a game plan? Some do. Some do that. And how is he getting that backspin? And if he knows that he cannot get that backspin, is he got a different, does he have a different swing versus that pitcher? Is he trying to go to the other side of the field? Is he trying to, you know, do more situational hitting? See, that's where I believe that I concentrate more, situational hitting. When there's nobody on base, lead off, and I'm leading off the inning, or there's 2 outs and nobody on base, I'm not even thinking. And it's good not to think, but I don't have an approach at the plate. I'm just looking, see ball, hit ball. But the pros, what are they doing? Are they thinking stats? Are they thinking, man, I haven't got a hit in 26 at-bats, this is the time for me to do it? Are they going for themselves? You know, because, you know, two outs, nobody on, and you're a batter up, and if you get a double, and you wind up scoring, you wind up leading a rally, those things could change games. Those kind of situations in games can tilt the game one way or another. So if you get a triple with 2 outs and you score on a wild pitch, that's significant. If you get a single and then steal second base, and then the next guy gets a double, scores you, then the next guy gets a single, and then now you got 2 runs with all starting with 2 outs, and you're the one that started that rally. Those are significant periods in those games. And, you know, what are you doing, you know, runners on first and second, runners on second and third, 1 out, 2 out, situational hitting. Where is your approach, you know? For me, it's always about concentration. The other thing is I would want to see these batters is I want to see how they value at-bats. Famously, I forget who was the all-time great, but I know Tony Gwynn, but there's another one that I'm thinking of. But Tony Gwynn mentioned that he would set up pitchers for later on in the games. In the first couple at-bats, since he was up there with nobody on, or it wasn't an RBI situation, he would set up pitchers for later on. So he figured the starter, and this is Tony Gwynn, who played in the 90s, great left-handed hitter, wonderful hitter, Hall of Famer. And he said that he was going to see a starting pitcher maybe 3 times. If he faced them 4 times, then that pitcher was dealing, right? So that second and third at bat is where he would try to get his most damage on. Because the first at bat, he's just looking to see how the pitcher is today. And maybe he'll get a knock. And maybe he'll hit the ball hard somewhere. If there's a runner on base, he'll probably drive him in. But remember, Tony Gwynn, one of the all-time greatest hitters, is batting 2-3-4 in the lineup. So he's going to bat in the first inning. And he's either going to bat with one runner on or 2 runners on. And that's it. So that first at-bat can be a lot. So Tony Gwynn used to say this famously, that he would set up other at-bats. Well, in contrast, Greg Maddux would set up batters for later on in the game. So that's the thing. So as a hitter, I'm looking to see what these batters are doing. What are their concepts? What are their thoughts? So this year, when baseball comes back, because baseball's coming back, trust me, baseball's coming back, look for those little things and wonder. And even if you can get a question or two into the big leaguers, you know, Instagram, Facebook, wherever, Twitter, ask them, what was your approach in this at bat versus this pitcher? How did you? Because these are the insights that's gonna make you a more intelligent fan, or it's gonna not make you an intelligent fan. What it is gonna get you more into the game, because there's always a game within the game, and there's multiple games within the game going on in the baseball game. So these are one of the things you want to see. These are one of the things, and hitting is a beautiful, beautiful art. And the reason why it's an art, it's because there's not just one way to do it. The big leaguers want to get the bottom half of the baseball. The Park District, 40 and over leagues, want to get the flush, the middle part of the baseball. And Park District, you know, recreational or even competitive league, softball and baseball, want to hit the ball on the ground because they want to force the defense to make plays. So watching these big leaguers, they like to, you know, and they're sticklers for their baseball bats. They want it a certain way. They want it made certain ways. But you'll see, there's some players that don't even take full swings. Mookie Betts comes to mind. His swing almost stops when he gets past his left shoulder as a right-hander. So it's really interesting. But what he's doing is he's getting a lot of friction. He's trying to keep as much friction on the bat on the ball. And that's giving him more backspin. So Mookie Betts, he does that. While Bellinger takes massive cuts. Like, his swing goes from left shoulder up above in Canada, all the way around, back down, all the way down to Mexico. Like, his swing is massive, and it comes with such force. So look at these guys. Check them out. You know, get into detail with their at-bats, because it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And there is the art of hitting. Thanks for listening. Find me wherever you get your podcasts. Again, subscribe, like, share. Coming up is going to be my playlists, my batting practice, the music that I listen to when I'm taking batting practice, the music that I'm listening to when I'm training, when I'm doing pregame behind the plate, when we're doing infield drills. You know, I do all kinds of different playlists. And just to give you an example, I'm going to put a few songs up that I would have in my BP playlist. But yeah, this is going to be a whole playlist. I'm going to try to probably do an hour long playlist of my BP. BP takes about 35, 45 minutes. Yeah, we'll do 30 minutes of BP. So here's a track that I would put on BP.
Bebé, que estoy pepe, sí, puesto para darte más que placer. Hoy tú eres mía, sí, baby, de noche y de día. Hoy solo vine aquí a cumplir tus fantasías.
Ay, ella me gusta porque estoy pepe, siempre puesto para darle placer. Ella me pide que le dé y que le dé, y yo le hago todo lo que la complace.
So there he is. That's just a little brief prelude to my playlist. I'm going to put about a couple tracks up there so you can check it out. Maybe you guys use it in your playlist. All right. So, again, thanks for listening. Caught Stealing with E. Marquez, and I'm out.